Hey, Queens, before we get gay as fuck started, I have a delightful treat for you. As you know, I am doing a brand new season of Hey Queen on the Mothership with World of Wonder, streaming on WOW Presents Plus. I'm talking to all the girls of season 16. My interviews with them are the day they get eliminated on that Friday, and they come out on Monday. I'm getting the tea, I'm getting the juice, I'm getting the shade, I'm getting the drama, I'm getting it all. It's so much fun. And World of Wonder wanted me to share this special code for my podcast listeners to get 20% off their monthly subscription. So all you got to do is use the code JMGay, and honey, they're going to take this price under $4. You can get caught up on all of Hey Queen, plus all the international versions of Drag Race. Get over there and use the code JMGAY and get yourself 20% off your subscription to WOW Presents Plus, where you can watch all the new episodes of what? Hey Queen!
It's a Kiki with John and Mick G. Gonna spill all the tea. All my LGBTs, you're in luck, 'cause Johnny McGovern is gay as fuck.
Hello everyone, and welcome to Gay as Fuck. I am Mr. John T. McGovernus, he who is. And I was he who was not here last week. Why? Because, baby, I got struck down by a mega flu, honey. It was not COVID. It was the good old-fashioned flu. And it hit like a ton of bricks. I mean, one night I was at Balenciaga trying on the giant cargo sneakers, which, girl, on me, look like the exact right size foot for a giant like myself. I may have to cough up the $1,300 that it costs to get these fucking giant shoes. You can check out the picture on my Instagram stories of me in my Balenciaga look with these giant fucking shoes. And they don't look giant on me. They look in proportion. Finally. Anyway, one night I'm browsing around Balenciaga. The next day I wake up sick as a dog. Interviews canceled, things canceled, and I'm on a time clock ticking down. I have exactly 7 days to be 100% better from the time I got sick to last Friday when I had to do two episodes of Hey Queen. And baby, let me tell you, I was just sleeping pills, medications, fluids, chicken soup, and a huge pot bubbling over on the stove. It's broth, broth, broth. Finally, my neighbor gave me, he was leaving his car, and he said, oh, I have something to give you. And I said, well, I'm just running my haircut real quick. He said, no, just wait. And he ran downstairs with a bunch of Chinese herbs and a plastic sack of some kind of brown vitamin juice. He gave it to me. And at that point, I said, anything, whatever it takes. Because the day before, I was still kind of sick. And I took those. And let me tell you, the next day, I did feel better. So I'm going to need to find out what those magical Chinese herbs were. Because they made me, I felt better. And I was able to get through the entire taping of E-Queen. All good, but the one thing I could not do was this fucking podcast. So we did not get to talk about the Wendy Williams doc, so we'll get into that today. Before I do that, I'm just like looking at out the window at the top of my street while I'm sipping on the gayest soda, and this is not sponsored. The gayest soda is definitely Dr. Pepper, zero sugar, strawberries and cream. First of all, never forget the early aughts commercials of berries and cream, my Mr. Lad who loves berries and cream, which starred some improv actor I knew from the New York City scene. And I was quite jealous when he got that berry. Was it? Why can't I be the berries and cream man? But we can't, we couldn't. It was him. Anyway, I'm sipping on, that is the gayest soda. It tastes delicious. It's a little cloying in its strawberries and creamness, but in a cold, cold can. Delicious. Anyway, like I was saying, West Hollywood, where I live, is, sweetie, it is the hot spot for corporate tie-ins and pop-ups, and I'm living. not only did we get the new Pharrell Louis Vuitton pop-up two blocks away from my house these last month and a half, which is a very expensive delight, where I got to walk into the secret room with all the speedies without any kind of strings so you can touch them. But on the other end of the spectrum, they're building the new McDonald's a motherfucking corner, and not any McDonald's. It's something that they're doing called Wickdonald's. McDonald's brings anime fan McDonald's brings anime fans' favorite fictional restaurant to life. For years, anime fans have been making McDonald's inspired Wickdonald's restaurant as part of anime's most memorable movies and shows. Now, in collaboration with some of the biggest names in anime, Wickdonald's will move forward from fiction to real life. Manga packaging from AkiBrite. Sauce that packs a punch. What does that mean? I'm just looking at the article. Savory chili Wickdonald's sauce available for a limited time. And a 10-piece Wick Nuggets, which will taste exactly like McNuggets. But it'll be an immersive dining experience at McDonald's. And then, since it's West Hollywood, you can go get your dick sucked in the fucking bathroom. There probably won't be any dick sucking in the bathroom. I mean, look, it's West Hollywood. There could be dick sucking everywhere, but it doesn't mean it's necessarily happening. The potential for dick sucking is always there. If it's a gay area, there could be a dick getting sucked. Now, over on the Patreon, sweetie, we have done Biggest Celebrity Dicks Volume 1, which people are loving. And we will be doing this week Biggest Celebrity Dicks Volume 2. Now, on that, we dive into one of the cuntiest places on earth, the Data Lounge. Okay, I don't know if you've ever been on the Data Lounge, but it should just be called Gay Guys Complain at Each Other and Say Mean Things. You don't ever want to be a subject on Data Lounge, as I once did mistakenly Googled myself and saw my thread, and there was many mean comments on it. About my personal appearance. Oh my. So we don't ever, we'll never look at that again, and we'll never think about that. But when you want to find out about, there is a thread that's like, okay, which celebrity dicks have you seen? Tell us when, where, and how big. Okay, and let's go. And honey, the back and forth on this thread was enough for a full hour. You got tea and you got shade and you got just outraging toxicness, which can also be fun when it's not directed at you. So if you want to hear that, as well as a very deep dive into Wendy Williams and like my sad reaction to it, today we're going to talk about it. I'm going to give you the points, the latest updates. But when I was sick with the flu, and at home, I watched the Where is Wendy Williams? And I was devastated, much like Pepper LaBeija said she was in Paris is Burning, devastated. It was so sad. So if you want to hear my really depressed, sad, almost breaking into tears reaction in detail on the Wendy Williams doc, that's where you're going to want to go, as well as the Big Dick shows. That's patreon.com/ gayest of all time. And that's where we go deep. Okay, that is where we go deep. That's where I reply to every DM. That's where, look, if you want to be friends, join me over on the Patreon. Okay, it's a very tight-knit and lovely community. But there's so much to talk about. The Queer Eye girls are fighting. Diddy has more nasty, rotted, gutted accusations thrown at him. And someone shows us some very interesting information about the shape of Chris Appleton's face and why he might have had a little help. So let's get into it. Monster, nightmare, demeaning to work with. We're not talking about a Wendy Williams bootleg publicist describing working for Wendy Williams in the height of her dementia. No, we are not. People are describing, people on the set, sources, production sources, are saying in a new Rolling Stone expose, okay, which you've got to get into. And look, if you're a member of the Patreon, I read the entire article in entirety, skipping the boring parts, for your pleasure over at patreon.com/gayest of all time. But honey, let's get into the good parts. So they're talking about this, our article in Rolling Stone, is a full expose, okay, and it's titled "They Play Nice Inside the Tensions and Tumult at Queer Eye." Okay, so Bobby Burke, now look, full disclosure, I give zero shits about Queer Eye for the Straight Guy, okay? Many years ago, when they were casting the original Queer Eye for the Straight Guy, and I was a nightlife promoter slash internet personality, I got called in for the casting for it. And I did not understand the concept at the time that it was all about making people feel good. They brought me in as the nightlife expert, and they were like, what would you tell somebody if they were interested in going out, trying to go out to clubs in New York, but they were afraid that they were not going to be, you know, people weren't going to be nice to them? And my answer was, oh, I would tell them, don't go, honey. You don't need that drama. You don't need to get to that club. People are going to be mean. You should find a nice restaurant to go there. Don't try to go to the club. They are going to be mean to you. I don't know if you're ready for that. Once I saw the show, I said, oh, I guess I was supposed to say something about feeling good about yourself and all the rest. So I did not get that part. But of course, I was very familiar with the original Queer Eye show, love Jay Rodriguez, and it was a huge thing at the moment. When the new Queer Eye came on, I could have given two shits, really. I don't know what it was. Like, I like makeovers. I think it was a little too treacly, a little too sweetie pie. Look, I love this show as a show that someone who's come out, mom in the South, can watch, and she can feel good that, you know, like, oh, but that's just like my son. Oh, my goodness, I feel better. I love my gay son. That is wonderful. And it seemed like they did nice things for people. But it was not for me. I tried many times. Let me dip in. And I just, ugh. And look, in particular, I did not care for Jonathan Van Ness. I found it to his persona to be fake. And not that I knew what the opposite of the persona was, but like, oh, man, we're just going to get a little bit of kitty pitty here. We're going to get a little pretty mitty and a little sweetie bitty. And I thought his outfits were so ugly and unflattering. And so I was not a fan, but I didn't really care about any of them. I thought Anthony Porowski was kind of cute, and that's it. I didn't care. But little did we know that behind the scenes, the jockeying for who would be the biggest star was tearing apart the boys on the Queer Eye set. Now, look, they were all guys in their 30s who were thrown together. They were like, you're best friends now, faggots, get it together. Now be nice. And of course, when the whole world falls in love with you and buys the bullshit that you guys are actually all really great friends. I guess that's what you have to act like. But apparently, on the inside, Jonathan Van Ness was horrible to work with. Even making the show was difficult. Four production sources say, due in part to Van Ness' behind-the-scenes behavior. Three more sources who work with the reality star describe Van Ness as emotionally abusive, having rage issues, baby! The article talks all about how they were so famous, everyone loved them, and they had to act like they were great friends. But then three sources who work with Van Ness, as well as four production sources, said Van Ness was terrible to work with, using words like monster, nightmare, demeaning to describe them. Three people labeled Van Ness as emotionally abusive, having rage issues, and all seven sources said the star would lash out at crew members and people who worked closely with him. Them. There's a real emotion of fear around them when they get angry. It's almost like a cartoon where it oozes out of them. It's intense and scary. They were a yeller. It's in stark contrast to Van Ness' public personality. Then they go to say, like, he was good on the show, but baby, they said he would go from being really warm and sweet to at least once a day feel the need to yell at somebody. It might be something small. There's always going to be somebody around to point out and blame and make the villain of the day. And then apparently that caused tension, as well as the fact that he was considered the breakout star and I guess was acting like it. And so apparently they all started to break off into their own little sides, with only Tan France and Anthony Porosky actually being friends. And then Bobby Burke, as we know, quit just recently. And in this article, he says, well, I thought the show was over and that we were all quitting, but everybody else ended up signing their deal and this sucks anyway, so I'm out. They do film a lot. Like, I think they filmed like 2 or 3 seasons in a row. So imagine they're going to shitty places. They're staying at Doubletree Inns. Okay. They have nothing to do but hang out with each other. And I'm sure that was real cute season 1. But once they started to become stars with mansions that they could go home to, they were like, what the fuck am I doing in this fucking Doubletree Inn? This is fucking bullshit. Jonathan Van Ness is having a rage fit. Bobby Burke probably felt like he did all the work, because while everybody else could be like, go see a play, it'll open your mind, or like brush your hair with a curly brush, he had to fucking make over their whole fucking house. And that was probably the most work that anybody had to do. He's like, Anthony just made a fucking omelet. They play nice, but none of them are friends, says the production source. Look, people who were, I mean, if anyone really believed that the Queer Eye Fab Five were best friends, then you're fucking delusional. It's work. They were at best work friends. Okay. And that shouldn't be shocking to anyone with a brain. Yeah, Bobby Burke does all the heavy lifting, ripping down walls, building furniture, renovating entire spaces in a tight 4-day turnaround. I bet he is sleepy. No wonder he wanted to fucking quit. But Jonathan Van Ness, honey, I mean, he's had some turbulent times in the media lately, and this will continue to be turbulent. You know what was going to happen? Nothing. He is going to continue to be like, oh, little sweetie, beep, beepy, honey, on the episodes, and the show's going to go on. They already renewed it for 2 more years after the writer's strike, because Netflix got scared and said, oh shit, we need to get as much non-scripted programming as we can. And so they ordered a zillion more seasons. And I guess maybe that's why everybody else stayed. They said, look, it's not that bad. And the one who did most of the work, he quit. And now he's been replaced by Jeremiah Brent, who you may remember from the Rachel Zoe show, where he replaced Brad Goreski as the stylist assistant back in the day. And he was very notable for being lean, thin, and hot. And then he married Nate Berkus, and they have 3 kids together. And you can, I think I've mentioned this before, you can watch their relationship start to go into a place where they hate each other if you watch all of their Architectural Digests. They start off feeling real sexy and fun, and then each one they seem more beleaguered, and by the last one it seems like Jeremiah hates Nate and wants to rip his throat out. Let's laugh at everyone's pain to forget our own, shall we? Yes, we shall. But I mean, don't cry for him, Argentina, because baby, he is probably getting a nice payday to get this job, and this is gonna raise his profile and of course raise the sale of their living spaces or whatever the fuck other shit that they do to sell, and all their other millions of shows. So congratulations to him. And Jonathan Van Ness, you're an abusive monster. Oh, he's a nightmare to work with, and he looks terrible in that spaghetti strap dress. They look terrible in the spaghetti step dress. I'm sorry, this article actually goes back between he, she, and they, so I got confused. No disrespect to the horrible nightmare monster who's terrible to work with. Ay, ay, ay.
Death. 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 To all of them. Death. 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 Death.
right, let's talk a little more of sad news. So, but Wendy, where is Wendy Williams' doc has come out? 4 hours, four parts, filmed over 2 years, starting back in the day, like pretty much right after Wendy was officially canceled and the goddamn Sherry show. Fuck Sherry.
Death to all of them.
Was put on in its place. And it was during the time which Wendy was being like, podcast. I decided podcast. I'll do podcast. Where, again, at that time we had seen a couple appearances from Wendy, including the weird TMZ interview. You remember this? Where she showed Harvey and the other guy her foot. And seemed a little bit out of it and was like, podcast, I'll do podcast. And we're clear she didn't know what a podcast was. And didn't even ask. And never even thought about anything to do with it. It was very bizarre. So this starts with that. And we see Wendy in her house in her purple chair. And she's done up, made up. Now, not the perfect look that she had for many years on the Wendy Williams show. A little more low rent, a little more wonky, but still together. And she starts doing the interviews and she starts talking about her family. And she's like, Wanda, my sister Wanda. Well, there's just only one thing, one problem with me and my sister Wanda. Well, she doesn't like when I have the bottle. She doesn't like when I drink. And I love to drink. That's basically what she says. And we start in that era. And you can see, you know, she starts crying. She starts talking to her. She's managed by the jeweler, okay? I think his name is Will, who is her jeweler. He was her jeweler. He sold her fine jewelry. He had, at that point, stepped in to be her manager. And what the fucking A-list star like Wendy Williams is doing, like having the jeweler be her manager? That's a problem. At the same time, this is when Wells Fargo had stepped in to freeze her money, seeming that the expenses that were going out from her account, seemingly about her son, who was supposedly sent $100,000 on Uber Eats, $2 million on rent, et cetera, was, and it was supposed to be her legal, not guardian, but had power of attorney. That's when it flipped on them. And we find out in this documentary through a long, pathetic, sad, terrifying, devastating way. And I'll get into more of that. But we find out that during that later stage of Wendy Williams, when she was still doing the show, we know that they had the show on delay by 15 minutes. So in case Wendy was fucked up or drunk, that they could can the show and it wouldn't go live on the air. And it's at that time she went to take a break. And she went to Florida to be with her family. And now her family says at that time, she was doing better. She was gaining weight. She was around family all the time. She was less lonely and she wasn't drinking so much, we guess. And then when the time came for her to go back, the family said, no, I think she actually needs to stay here. And they forced the issue. The guardian stepped in, said she had to go back to New York. And that's supposedly where things went really downhill, because that's when she still didn't go back to the show. They canceled the show. She ended up apparently drinking a lot. There's a lot of parts in the documentary where the manager, Will, is like, did you drink this whole bottle? And he has like, you know, a mega sized bottle of Smirnoff or whatever. And she's like, leave it. Leave it. We saw that in the trailers. But it becomes clear that Wendy is not only not all there. And we learned, of course, right before, on the eve of the documentary coming out, her medical team, whoever the fuck that is, because again, it's not clear. They say her team, but we know she doesn't have a manager. She doesn't have an agent. She doesn't have any of these people. She doesn't even seem to have an assistant. She only had this manager and publicist, who we'll talk about in a little bit. Wendy is sitting in her bed most of the time, seemingly a lot of times she's coming in and she's hungover, fucked up, with the doctor, I don't know her team. I don't know who her team is, her medical team, but whoever they are, they released that she had dementia and perhaps aphasia, which is the same thing that Bruce Willis currently is diagnosed with, where you're going to be losing your memory and your personality. Now, the son seems to think a lot of the dementia is brought on by alcoholism, which is like dementia alcoholosia or what, something like that. And it certainly seems like that. But when we get down to podcast, I'll do podcast. We kind of start to think that maybe Wendy doesn't have it all together. And she's abusive to the people in her life. The lady's doing her nails to this. There's this girl. So supposedly this girl was at one point, Wendy says, yeah, you know, my friend told me, you know, she recommended her. She was good publicity. She knows finance. She also knows finance. Wendy seems so out of it when she's talking about that. And this scene, Wendy's niece, the newscaster, is coming in and she's like seeing Wendy for the first time in a long time. And she's shocked. And then the publicist comes in and tries to be acting all nice. And she's like, basically, who the fuck are you? Who the fuck are you to talk to me about my aunt? And Wendy's just kind of sitting there like glassy eyed in a Versace robe. And all the totems of Wendy's fun apartment, though. Versace furniture and the colorful stuff and all of her crazy outfits that seemed so fun when she had her shit together all just seem empty and sad and pathetic in this thing. There's so much. There's like one Gucci t-shirt outfit she keeps wearing every time she's going somewhere, and it's this sparkly Gucci t-shirt with Gucci in giant gold sequin letters and Louis Vuitton hoochie shorts with the pockets coming out and Gucci nylons, I was going to say Gucci pantyhose, and big giant Dior ski boots. And her manager's always wearing a different like designer sportswear, and Wendy's wearing the same fucking outfit over and over again. And like the only seems that she does is like go places and then yell at the driver and then yell at her publicist. There's a really heartbreaking sequence where she's driving around looking for the vape store that was by the Wendy Williams show. And she's like, this isn't it. And they're like, this is it. She's like, this isn't it. Well, just go in there and get my thing. Get the thing I like. The girl goes in and she's like, hi, you know, do you know Wendy Williams? Do you know what she normally buys? And they're like, yes, this is what you get. She's like, this is what the guy says you always get. And she's like, this isn't it. This is the wrong one. Follow my directions. Go to the Wendy Williams show, the Sherry show. And they're like, okay, well, that's what we did. And they drive around the block to the Sherry show, which has Sherry outside staring down at Wendy. And then she's like, okay. And then they pull around the corner and they're back at the vape store. And she's like, oh, well, this is the one. She's like, oh, never mind. Let's just go back and have champagne. You like champagne? You want to have some champagne? And it was such a sad, pathetic moment. And the publicist is like, sure, yeah, I like champagne. The most sad and pathetic it gets is when Wendy takes a surprise trip to Los Angeles without her manager or the guardian knowing, with the publicist. And it sort of seems at that moment that the publicist is trying to take over the manager slot or somehow jump up in this corporation of two, and takes her to LA where they arrange a meeting with NBC Universal for Wendy, who is in no shape to go to a big meeting. And she's wearing the same fucking Gucci sequin shirt outfit with the hose and the tee and the big shoes, whatever. And of course, before they go to the meeting, they go to Nobu Malibu, where Wendy is drinking. And they even have the footage of the publicist kind of side-eyeing Wendy, like having drink of clear liquor after drink of clear liquor, like martinis or whatever. And then they drive and just same at Nobu. She says, like, do you watch the Wendy Williams show? And then the waitress is like, yes, I do. She's like, well, that's me. And she's like, I didn't want to fan out. She's like, that's me. I'm having a new show. She goes, visits her stars, and some of the girls are there. And they're like, oh, my God, Wendy. And she's like, wow, I'm doing a new show. And I'm going to dress them like this, more like this. You know, they all wanted to make me look all nice for the other daytime show. I wanted to dress sexy. And she, throughout the whole this part of the doc where she's talking about being on TV, keeps telling people, I'm going to be back on TV. And, you know, this Wednesday, this September, this, I'm showing it. And she starts doing these narratives where she's like, I'm going to take off my wig. And then I'm going to be like, come here. You want this? That's going to cost a lot of money. And I'm going to give things away. So she has this meeting with NBC, which we do not see. But we, as the audience, know this shit is not going to go well, did not go well, and did not go well. Because, of course, at the end, they show a little, you know, caption that says, like, Wendy never heard anything back from NBC. The deal never materialized. And she leaves being like, it was wonderful. They loved me. Now, the family start to come in the third part, of the fourth part of this doc. We finally see Wanda, her sister, her Regina, her best friend that she talked about on the Wendy Williams for many years. She's on there, too. We hear from the son. Now, the son, remember, though he is a spoilt Nepo baby who spent $100,000 on Uber Eats, it doesn't mean that he is stealing her money. Because if we knew Wendy is a rich woman, and Wendy has always said what she wanted was for her son to have anything he wanted. And I'm sure if that meant $100,000 on Uber Eats or $2 million on his apartment in Florida, then that's what he was going to get. He's certainly not stealing that money from her, and she made that quite clear. And you'd think Wendy would have at least $60 or $70 million after 12 years of making $16 million a year. At least $40 million, you know, in the bank. So that's quite a bit of money that they are freezing. But he's the most level-headed of all. And him and his cousin are mostly like the voices of reason. And they're like, you know, there's scenes, of course, at a restaurant where she's ordering wine and they're like, don't give her wine, and with the manager and with the family. Now, Wendy's one shady brother does show up. I think his name is Eddie Williams. Now, he's the one who's been making online content and blogs and things. And honey, we know that's shady. Eddie is shady, if that is his name. We see Wendy's dad. She does go down to Florida. She's with the family. And it does seem like that's where she should be. Because the other shots we get are Wendy alone in her apartment, staring into space in a big, colorful Versace robe, completely alone. And now at the end, the family was talking with Wendy on the phone, but she went and I guess has been in treatment for maybe a year now. But it's weird that she can call them, but they can't call her, as Mr. Big once said to Carrie on Sex and the City. She can reach me, but I can't reach her. So, and it seemed like Wanda was on the phone coaching Wendy, because there seemed to be a conversation where she was like, okay, well, the conservator didn't answer, so make sure you write that down in your notebook and say that she never got you the answers back. And they said she's sounding better and maybe having it more together. But, you know, we're never going to get podcasts. We're never going to get it. I mean, I every time Wendy said, I'm going to be back on TV, it's all I want. It was so sad because honestly, that's what I want too. I want Wendy back on TV, but I'm much like Britney Spears having a new album and new videos. This has to be something that we have to probably put on the table and or under the table in a box in the storage area in our dreams and leave there. Because as much as I would have liked to someone just press record and have Wendy talk about all the hot topics every single day on podcast and make $200 million on a Spotify deal, it's not going to happen. All we can do is just pray. Let's just join our hands and pray. Dear gay Jesus up in heaven, please help Wendy Williams to heal and get better and to be with her family and not be taken advantage of by bootleg publicists or managers. Now, since the doc has aired, the manager has quit. The publicist has quit. So it's just Wendy in rehab calling her sister for advice. So let's just all hope the best for Wendy, honey. Let's hope the best for Wendy.
The storm is passing over.
Are you ready for allegations? More allegations for daddy. Are you ready for allegations? Allegations for daddy. Allegations. More lawsuits. More lawsuits. Drug-filled orgies with prostitutes. Are you ready for a lawsuit? Lawsuit against daddy. So, just when we thought Diddy, I don't know, what's going on in the Diddy case other than on social media? Nothing, it seems. But more lawsuits are coming forward, a big one. Diddy accused of sexually assaulting male producer and forcing him to perform sex acts during drug-filled orgies with prostitutes in bombshell $30 million lawsuit. This came out last week. Rodney Lil Rod Jones claims that Diddy subjected him to a year of groping and constant unsolicited touching of his anus.
I put my finger in his ass personally, so I know his ass was loose.
Well, three women are suing the star for sexual abuse beyond Cassie. So I guess this is lawsuit number four. So this guy, Lil Rod, says he worked on the Diddy Love album with him, which was, you know, I guess that came out, what, 2 years ago, something like that. Had no hits. Remember, Diddy was going to be like, they call me Love now. Call me Love. Yeah, sure. We're going to call you Raperoonie. And he worked on the album for a year, and look, he gives all sorts of shit. I mean, as that, again, we have the same sort of narrative that we have with Cassie, where he said that they would go out, Diddy would spike things with ecstasy, with drinks for the people that they were going to fuck. He would force him to go to strip clubs and wear a bad boy hat and procure sex workers and prostitutes and strippers to come for parties. He took him on, and this was very interesting. He introduced him to Cuba Gooding Jr. on a yacht and then was like, you all should get to know each other, and left him alone with Cuba Gooding Jr., who allegedly began touching, groping, and fondling Mr. Jones' legs, his upper thigh area near his groin, and the small of his back near his buttocks and his shoulders. Did we all know that Cuba Gooding was getting down like that? I think we knew that he was an assaulter, but I don't think we knew trying to touch on men's anuses. Interesting. Now, he also, this guy also says that when he was hanging out with Diddy in Miami, because, you know, Diddy was dating Young Miami from City Girls, and supposedly Young Miami's cousin followed him into a bathroom, and after he'd rebuffed her advances, and as he was peeing, tried to get in the knees and put his dick in her mouth anyway. He also claims, now he has, in this lawsuit, 73 pages. I watched somebody break it down on TikTok for about an hour. And this guy has come with receipts. I mean, there's other dark shit too. There, first of all, there's the picture of him and Cuba Gooding. There's a picture of supposedly Stevie J fucking a client, AKA an old gross white guy, for Diddy as sort of part of whatever the Illuminati bullshit or whatever the fuck kind of fucking old men to get influence type of thing that's going on. And who's also included in the lawsuit is Diddy's son, because supposedly dad and son are doing these things and having underage girls and prostitutes all over and doing drugs and ecstasy at the same time together. What is this, a Say Uncle video? What is this, Fun Size Boys? What is this, Boy for Sale? Is LeGrand Wolf at this party? Now, remember, a while back, Diddy, remember Diddy did this thing where he said, you know, I'm giving back the publishing to all my artists so that they can get their full publishing. I'm not going to take any more of my horrible, gigantic amount of publishing. They probably signed over their publishing to him back in the day. But he made this big thing about doing it. And some people, including Aubrey O'Day, who you don't necessarily think of as the sharpest tool in the book, but she was dropping truth bombs. And she said, you know why he's giving this back? It's not for the money. It's because to accept your publishing rights back, you have to sign a full ironclad NDA, which means nobody from the past can talk about the shit they went through with Diddy if they want that money. So that seems, this all seems to be some clues as to why that was going on with Diddy, is because all these people that Diddy have abused have a lot of stories, and they were trying to lock up everybody. And of course, Diddy denied all the shit. Justin Combs, Nepo Baby, said he categorically denies these absurd allegations that I was partying with my dad and underage girls and doing drugs and ecstasy, even though there's pictures of such a thing happening. Maybe not to drugs and ecstasy, but definitely partying with underage girls. I mean, Diddy is just seems to be assaulting everyone. He drugged this guy, Little Rod, and where he woke up in his bed in the next day, all not knowing what happened with a man and Diddy and some other woman. Diddy had to cancel his reality show. He had to step down from Revolt because nobody wanted to see sexual assault or having some kind of cutesy pie family reality show when really this kind of shit was going on. Diddy skipped the Grammys, even though Love, this album that Little Rod worked on, was nominated for R&B Album of the Year. Interesting. Talk about industry connections. Nobody cared about that fucking album. And that was nominated? Jeez. So, Diddy, honey, I mean, if you want to get into the full court case, I mean, that's basically it, though. I mean, just more horrible shit. Diddy, of course, being like, I could take care of him. He shows screenshots and pictures of head of Diddy's security, different record label execs. And, you know, he says, I have these pictures, and I have these videos, and we will be happy to provide them for public consumption and for evidence. So Diddy, once again, you in danger, girl. I mean, I think we all know what we have to say now, don't we?
I put my finger in his ass personally, so I know his ass was loose.
Yes, we do. Stop. Now make that butt serum. Okay, this stuck out at me this week. Asset Star. Asset Asterix, I guess. It's a hole spelled H-O-L-E. This is not a sponsored post. New kind of wellness. The first brand dedicated to optimal butt health, hygiene, and aesthetics. So their first product is Hole Serum, okay? It soothes anal irritations and improves skin health. Honey, I wish they were sponsoring this. But I just think this is a public service. I mean, I considered buying several bottles of this to give out to all my favorite bottoms. So we want to protect America's most natural, beautiful resource, bottoms, beautiful holes. It has botanical complex, vitamin E, and bisacabal and turmeric. We know turmeric's good for you from watching TikTok videos. The benefits of daily use. It soothes inflammation. Okay, if you got fucked real hard, it'll help heal the tissue from when they ran a train on you. Makes your tissue strength and elasticity better so you can dig huger dicks, I guess. And brightens an even skin tone. Anal skin is sensitive and easily irritated. Don't we know it? Okay, well, I would like these people to send me some. I'd say I need 5 bottles. If you could please send that to me, pass out to my number one gents. It's for all skin diets. No BS ingredients, they say, and it's made in the USA. If I posted this and tagged them, they would send me the free stuff and make me their spokesperson. Well, that's what I'll do. Hooray for butthole health. Yay, bottoms. Thank you for your service. Bitches ain't popping. Google my ass. Only time you on the net is when you Google my ass. You fucking little whores. Fucking up my decor. Couldn't get Michael Kors if you was fucking my decor. Okay, and last but not least, baby, I saw a TikTok which really was very interesting about Chris Appleton. Now, you know, I wouldn't say hate Chris Appleton, but we love to look. We love to look at him and judge because he's very rich. He has a perfect body and a very angular face. Now, this is where the TikTok comes in. It's very interesting.
Chris Appleton, a.k.a. Kim Kardashian's hairdresser, has had procedures done. Now, looking at a video of him when he was significantly younger, you can see that his face looks a lot different to where he is.
A lot different. Okay, so what I'm seeing on the screen here is a complete different face shape. Okay, oval. Long oval face shape. The cheekbones do not exist. The jawline do not exist. Let's let this person continue. Dr. Zane, who I believe is a dermatologist and a Botox user.
Is present. Looking at him now, you can see his face is very different. Looking at the cheeks, you can see they're very defined. The jawline specifically is a lot more defined. The width of his lower half of his face is a lot more exaggerated. And you could argue that he's had some work done. Obviously, this is just speculation, just based on my opinion, but I would say perhaps dermal filler. Dermal filler in men, you use too many focus on the lower half of your face. You increase the jawline, the angle, the width of the jaw to make it look more masculine. In his case, by doing so, it has made his face look more exaggerated, more masculine, more stronger. The contours of the face are a lot more strong. Do you think that is Hamilton,
a.k.a.? Uh-huh, yes. And if you see the before and after, it is quite clear. And what I want to say is, well played, Chris Appleton, because you know I do not like facial filler in my stars unless it's done with the lightest hand so we cannot see it. And certainly on men, filler under the eyes and the face can be a real mistake. But whatever they did to Chris Appleton. I mean, and you know, I've seen the videos online. Can never remember the name of the doctor, but it's the guy in Turkey who does what he calls the diamond jaw facial. And finally, I realized eventually, okay, what they're doing is putting the filler in the jaw. But honey, it really gives you. If I didn't have a full beard, aka face wig, to hide any imperfections in my jaw, I would fucking get that done in a minute. Because Chris Appleton looks way better after these procedures, if that's what they are. But Dr. Zane believes so, and he said so in a very calming ASMR-type voice. So we must believe him. Do we think that Chris Appleton, a.k.a. blah, 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 we must. Yes, we must. Well, well played, Chris Appleton. I mean, the difference is subtle yet striking. And that is what we want for our cosmetic surgery for men. You know what I mean? Look, I'm not above anything, but honey, no. Can you, the danger is looking weird, all right? Because you don't ever look younger after getting that work done. You just look weird. Maybe you don't look wrinkled, but you don't look, it doesn't look like naturally youthful. Very few people are looking naturally youthful. Demi Moore, we talked about that. I did take a look at the Pharrell and Marc Jacobs did an interview on the Louis Vuitton YouTube channel, a deep in-depth navel gazing, self-congratulatory, but yet still fascinating because I love this shit. A conversation about both their work at Louis Vuitton and how Marc Jacobs sort of opened the door for Pharrell at Louis Vuitton when they made the sunglasses, the millionaire sunglasses together. And Marc Jacobs famously and publicly had a full yank, a full facelift, sweetie, recently. And he said, because I want to look younger. I want to look younger. And I got to say, it looks pretty good. It looks pretty good. He doesn't look weird. You know, it currently probably needs to settle a teeny bit more. But I'd say for 60 years old, he looks good. So congratulations to that. Though I'm not, he was doing kind of a macho look for a while. And currently his look is like Park Avenue Nan. He has his hair slicked sort of in a suave manner, but he's wearing like a black belly flat, a boat neck sweater. Park Avenue Nan, just Nan out for a stroll on Park Avenue. But he does carry a huge Birkin, and you know, I love that. So God bless. And I'd say he didn't do the facelift and you don't need filler because it's lifted. And I bet in give him 1 year, he's going to look incredible. He already looked pretty good. I gotta admit. If you love the shirts that I'm wearing on Hey Queen, I really want to recommend you go check out the people that make them. I'm wearing these shirt and jacket combos on Hey Queen, which I am obsessed with. I almost feel like it's a male twin set. Now, the company is JCRT NY. And these guys, they're very high-end couture designers who have done this second brand because they are big bears hairy bears who are designed for all, but especially big hairy bears, because they go up to proper sizing for a large gentleman. But these plaids, the mixtape of plaids that they have, just are so chic. And, you know, they are based on the many different things, but like, for example, they'll reference the colors from a movie poster or the cover of a book like Catcher in the Rye or the movie poster of Jaws. Those colors will be interpolated into the plaid. So it's not in your face. No one's like, oh my God, you're wearing the colors from the Jaws poster. But you know that they know that we know that you know. And that's very chic. And the color combos are incredible. And this season, I asked them, I said, please, I love when you have me the jacket and the shirt that match. And baby, they sent me the collection of all the matching shirts and jackets. And I am living. It is just so, talk about ease. Look, because when you see, when you don't see me on camera, baby, I'm wearing gym shorts, a black tank top, giant Balenciaga sneakers. And that's it. You know what I mean? That's what I wear for most of the year in Los Angeles, because every day is 70 degrees. In the winter, we turn to a giant hoodie and then the same thing on the bottom. But for being on camera or being photographed or going to an event, honey, now I have all these beautiful JCRT clothes from all over the years. And they all match in these different matching jackets and shirts. You can throw that on and boom, outfit. It's done. You're giving a look. You're serving a riz, you know what I mean? You're serving riz, as the children would say, okay? Someone did tell me my fit was hot as I was standing on the corner. So what can I say? I have a lot of riz and I'm serving a fit. But these shirts and jackets are fucking incredible. They also do pants, they do hoodies. This is not paid promotion, though they did pay me in the goods that I can wear on the show, which then go into my wardrobe and become the only thing that I want to wear. So check them out, jcrt.com. Get into all of a unpaid, but a number one fan. I am a number one fan. She's chic. What can you do? Well, everyone, I hope you enjoyed the show today. I'll be back next week with a new episode. Look, if there's more of me that you want, if you like, I am having a delight just listening to Johnny just talk in my ear about all sorts of gay fucking bullshit, well, then join me on Patreon, because I'm doing that with my homo homies, many different friends of mine from the Gay Pimpin' podcast, from Gayest of All Time. And we are just talking about all the shit that happens in life, plus the gayest shit, fashion, naked dudes, magazines, outfits, wallpaper, sexy things that happen, to getting into our own personal business, movies, music, etc. So come on over to patreon.com/gayestofalltime, and that's where you can find me. Remember, you can use the code JMGAY, JMGAY, to get 20% off a Wow Presents Plus subscription, baby. Get that and watch all the new episodes of Hey Queen, new episodes every Monday. Love talking to you. So glad to be back with you. Thank you for listening. Write a nice review. You know, I like to, if I'm ever feeling bad about myself, I can look at other podcasts that have less reviews than me and feel like, well, at least I have this many reviews. So, and then of course there's millions more where I can be like, well, they have a lot of reviews. Let's help push it up. Okay. I'd like to get to 200 reviews by April. How about that? Can we do it? That's like 70 reviews y'all need to leave, or ratings. Just there's enough of you. Just do it for me. Have a good gay week, and I'll see you next week on another episode of Gay as Fuck.
I'm gay as fuck.
I put my finger in his ass personally, so I know his ass was loose.